Hello, and welcome to episode 268 of the Casual Tryhard Podcast. I'm Brian.
And I'm James.
And this week we have a teeny tiny, eeny weeny band list update.
Sure.
And this is probably going to take like multiple weeks, we'll see. Or just kind of like, I don't know if we're going to work through this whole list. But like, I think it's your fault. You were talking about how interesting some of the like build around uncommons have been in recent sets.
Yeah.
So I kind of went through and put down a list of like all the like impactful uncommons we have had in the last like few years.
Yeah, I added a few more to the list.
Thank you.
I think we can do, I didn't add a ton more. The list was already pretty long. But I think we can kind of do a little combination of both here.
Yeah.
I think this is going to, for what I wanted to get out of this, I think it's going to be more than one episode, maybe even more than two episodes. But also, I don't think we necessarily have to talk about every card on this list. I mean, if we have something to say, we can say it, but I don't think we have to dive deep into all of these. But yeah, I just thought that when, I think this started the last time we did our set review episode, was that when I was going through the spoilers, I found myself looking forward to seeing the signpost on commons. Thought to myself, self, that's kind of weird.
So you, that's how you address yourself, self?
Yeah. Yep, exactly.
So while we're doing this, and this again might be a thing that comes up every couple weeks or whatever, but there's plenty of like room for you guys to chime in and be like, hey, we'd like you to talk about this. And I don't know, we're probably like 3 days from another spoiler season starting, but
I think we are like 3 days from another spoiler season. So,
but if you have any show ideas, anything you want to say to us, reach out to us on social media, Facebook, Discord, the artist formerly known as Twitter, email, all those links are in the description. So come in, say hey, and we'll get back to you.
Yeah. Because we are coming up on another spoiler season, means we're also going to have set reviews and limited first looks and all that stuff that we normally do. This little mini series here might take a little bit to get out. But we want to keep it focused on like these interesting uncommons. So like Brian said, if there's any that you guys think are interesting, you want added to the list, let us know. If there's anything you wish us to discuss about uncommons, you can let us know that as well. All the links are down below. If you're looking to support the show, there's a couple ways you can do it. The first is with a TCG player affiliate link, casualtryhard.com/TCG. Surf on over to TCG player there and make your purchases. If you want any of these uncommons, if you're looking for, you know, anything for a new deck or whatever, surf over there, make your purchases, and you'll support the show at the same time. We appreciate it. If you want to support us more directly, patreon.com/casualtryhardmtg is where you can do that. If you sign up for Patreon, you'll get access to our show notes. You'll get access to our pre-show, which is about another hour's worth out of content out of us this week. We went a little long this week, so our patrons will have a little bonus there. About all manner of stuff, not necessarily Magic. Just two buddies catching up, making sure our equipment works. You never know what we're going to talk about. It's usually pretty entertaining.
Or informative. Like
yes, informative also. We both have vastly different careers with different expertise and skill sets. So you never know what we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
So if any of that sounds good, or if you just want to support the show, you can do that as well. Patreon.com/casualtryhardmtg and chip a couple bucks in.
Yeah. All right. That'd be great. So first up, we have the ban and restrict announcement, which like, I don't know if I was like, you know, not like as tapped into like the Magic discourse as I used to be, but like the fact that apparently at the end of just like weekly MTG last week, Ben was, is it Ben? Right? Was just like, hey, we'll be back next week to talk about the BNR.
Blake.
Ben. Whatever. It came with a B. They were vowels and consonants after that B.
Were there basketball shorts though?
I don't know if there were basketball shorts. but he was like, "Hey, we're gonna check in on that with you after the B&R." It was like a lot of people were like, "Oh, apparently there's a B&R happening next week."
Yeah.
Like, we're just like, "Oh." So, they did. Before we talk about the actual cards, one thing I will say is it does feel like they did a little bit more in the way of like explaining why they made or did not make changes
mm-hmm.
than they have done in the past, which will hopefully like help some people kind of understand
where they're coming from.
Where they're coming from, because there's been a lot of, like, they just said no changes and then didn't say anything.
Right.
So at least this is, like, a little bit, perhaps, better.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks, Dan, for really putting in the work there.
Yeah.
So, standard, there are no changes, which I think is
fine.
I mean, if you told me that they were gonna ban Shieldred, like I'd probably be okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know like how much that improves the format. Right? Yeah. It just kind of changes what ridiculous black four drop you play.
So when does Shieldred rotate? Because Shieldred
effectively never. I think fall 2020. Five, maybe 2026.
Yeah.
When did Dominaria came out this last fall, right? Or the fall before? No, fall before, because we were. So it came out.
So it's
going to
rotate this fall.
No, that's the old rotation schedule. 2025. Because it came out in 2023, right?
So we still got 2 years of Shieldred left.
Yes. No, a year. I guess a year and a half. Yeah.
Year and a half, yeah.
Yeah. Cause, like,
so what do you think the chances of Shieldred making it a year and a half are?
So like tinfoil hat, right? Mm-hmm. You can't print a four drop that is in black that is better than Shieldred.
Right.
Right, like you can, and then just wreck four other formats. You just can't, right? Yeah. And so I think that if they like have a bunch of cards they want to be seeing play,
mm-hmm.
right? Like it's all well and good, but like if the to not have a longer rotation, but like if they're like, man, why aren't we moving packs? This card should be like a standard all-star. And it's like, yeah, no, it loses to Shieldred on like every metric. Like, oh yeah, that probably explains why we can't move packs.
Right.
Like you could see them doing that. Or just like, I think there's going to be like a black X deck for as long as Shieldred is legal. Mm-hmm. And like, are they okay with like black green mid-range? And, like, Esper will stop being a thing once Rafine goes away.
Yeah.
Right, like, that's kind of the pool to be Esper.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, some, like, black-white nonsense, like, control-ish mid-range deck with, like, Shieldred. And, like, now that every color gets card draw, like, that's not a problem. So, mm-hmm. like, I could see, I don't know, I'd probably say probably, like, a 75% chance it makes it through. But I could definitely see, like, you know, in a year, year and a half, being like, we're going to ban this just to give the format 6 months to breathe and be different.
Yeah.
Because, like, that's, like, I think that's the risk of the longer rotation schedule, right? Is just, like, people staring at the same decks over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
So.
No, I mean, evidently, according to their data, that's what people want. I kind of thought that was the draw to standard, was that you didn't do that, but.
Yeah. But it is now returned to being the most played 60-card tabletop format, in addition to remaining the most played digital format. I don't know, like, how many places are even offering 60 card tabletop events at the LGS level? Like, none around here that I know of.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't, I guess I can't speak for what the rest of the country does and, or the rest of the world. And I can hardly speak for our local area anymore. It's been so long since I set foot in a game store, but.
I can give anecdotal evidence about the San Antonio area.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, that was what I forgot to ask you about in the pre-show.
Former guest and, former member of our limited podcast network, mm-hmm. Anthony, has cheated on us and is now playing a Weeb Magic. He's playing Card Fight or whatever. But he was like, we were talking about it. And he was just like, yeah, like everyone down here just plays Commander. No one plays like, he's like, and then they were talking about competitive Commander. And I just like tried not to laugh at them. And I was like, no, it's a thing. It's a thing. Where four people sit down and they're like, my goal is to win, as opposed mm-hmm. to my goal is to do the thing and celebrate rats or whatever.
Yeah.
But he's like, no one plays 60 card Magic there at all.
Yeah.
He's not, I was like, yeah, I was like, I've not seen any local advertising at stores about like 60 card Magic events other than maybe like, hey, it's the store championship.
Mm-hmm.
And they're making us play standard.
Yeah.
So, but yeah. Pioneer was, again, no changes.
Which you thought was kind of odd, right?
Yeah, like, there I saw, so Jim Davis had an entire article on cool stuff that mm-hmm. was devoted to why you should ban Treasure Cruise.
Yeah.
And, like, LSV's article in response to the bans was kind of like, I don't understand why they didn't ban Treasure Cruise. He brought up that, like, Phoenix was 18% of the PT and still won 57.7% of its matches.
Which is kind of wild.
Yeah, for, like, a deck to have effectively a 60% win rate
mm-hmm.
and have, whatever that was, 80 players.
Yeah, something. I mean, what makes that number even crazier, though, is that you can only have a 50% win rate in the mirror.
Yeah, or they just don't count the mirror, which is sometimes.
Do they not count the mirror?
Sometimes they do. Some like a lot of times they'll take out the non-mirror. He didn't specify it was non-mirror match win rate. But yeah, like
yeah, I know. Sometimes they break it out. I didn't.
Yeah, I don't know if he did, but yeah, like if you have a 50% win rate against yourself,
yeah,
and then you still pull.
57%
on, but even if you take out the non-mirror match win rate, like,
yeah,
if I told you, hey, a deck put like one or maybe it was one into the top eight, maybe two,
yeah.
But it won 57% of its matches, you'd be like, ooh, that might be a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they are looking at it to be a problem, but they were saying like, oh, hey, Azorius Control had no more lies to Zeus and Meticulous Archive. And it's like, yeah, but the deck won like 40% of its matches.
Yeah.
So like can't call it was a most played deck, but it was also the most dumpstered deck.
Mm-hmm.
And then like Amalia combo. Yay. And then it's like, Picklock Prankster, and then oh hey, Field got better. Which, no, thank you.
Right.
Do I have all the cards to play Lotus Field? I do. Does it look miserable every time I watch it? It does. And then like, hey, Rakdos Vampires won the whole event, so yay diversity. And it's like, well, one of those decks is unplayable in blue white.
Right.
Amalia is a deck that like. Is just the kind of deck they ban?
Yeah, I mean, they were talking... Before you said something in the pre-show, I had heard also, but they were talking about tagging something out of Amalia just because the games were going so long.
Going long, and then also you get to the, like... I don't know if you didn't watch the top eight, but in the semifinals, the red-white heroic player... multiple times casts like Lauren's escape.
Yeah.
On the wild growth walker.
Mm.
So that it couldn't die, so you couldn't get out of the loop.
Just drew the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, like, Phoenix, like, keeping Treasure Cruise around was kind of, like, what I thought would go. Because, like, the deck is super consistent and, like, plays the same game kind of over and over and over again. And it has, like, kind of the hallmark of a deck that they don't like, which is game one, you do graveyard shenanigans.
Mm-hmm.
But then game two, you board and stuff that gets around the use of your graveyard.
Right.
So there's not like kind of a, it's a graveyard deck that then doesn't need its graveyard in later games.
Yep.
Which is something they usually aren't a huge fan of.
Mm-hmm.
So like every format Treasure Cruise has been legal in, the format has devolved into the best deck, or let's say one of the top two decks being a blue-red deck that has, like, cheap removal and food for Treasure Cruise.
Yeah.
And just kind of plays, like, the same game every single match.
Yep.
And so, like, there, like, I think that there is a chance that it could go away in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If it can kind of continues it, like, I win 58% of my matches and I'm 20% of the field.
Yeah. I would imagine that's a pretty good indicator something's going to leave.
Yeah. But, so, like, this is another one of, like, hey, if you are interested in playing this deck in paper, but don't have a particular place you're planning on playing it, maybe wait. Off. Yeah, don't just, like, I want to have these cards just in case.
Yeah. I mean, the counterpoint that I made during the pre-show was that, like, you mentioned something about them saying everything's okay because Rakdos Vampires is a new deck in a tournament. And like my counterpoint to the Is It Phoenix thing is that it basically just that. In my experience playing that deck, at least on Arena, it has a pretty good Phoenix matchup. And like that might be enough to knock Phoenix down a peg. And I don't inherently think that Rakdos deck is a problem.
No.
Like, I've certainly lost with it.
Yes. I think it's fine. I think that one of the problems, and again, this was a pre-show thought, is that you have no reason to play Pioneer.
Yeah.
So there's going to be, like, less innovation that maybe people see. Like, if something like becomes really good on Arena, right, in Explorer, maybe that's enough to kind of like bubble to the surface. But there aren't like, I don't think there are a lot of like high, like major importance, high level tournaments
right.
coming up that are going to like inspire people to like sit down and like really like figure out.
Innovate
and like figure out how to like attack Rakdos or attack blue red.
Yeah.
Right, so it's kind of like, I don't know if you're going to get that innovation to kind of move the format forward. We might just be kind of stuck.
Maybe.
Which, you know, is kind of a product of, like, not having, like, events anymore.
Right.
Right. But, like, I think it's fine. Like, I've not seen hardly any, I've not played a ton, but I've not seen hardly any Phoenix on the ladder recently.
No, I played against a bunch of it.
Okay, I haven't played a bunch recently, but I was thinking today, like, oh, I haven't seen a bunch of Phoenix in a while.
Yeah.
But yeah, like it might just be that black red is a good like counter to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you also have the like, you know, it's now like becomes harder for them on some level to print good vampires. Cause like if they print like another good vampire, like that deck just gets like better. Like,
true.
Like, you know, a better Dusk Legion Zealot or whatever. It's a 1/2 that draws you a card. It's a 2/1 that draws you a card. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like then that, the like the deck.
It's a vampire inspector.
Yeah, exactly. Du-du-du-du-du. I'll suck your blood.
Here's a token.
Here's a token. There we go. It enters, draws you a card, makes a blood. There we go.
Yep. One mana.
Explore, no changes. It's just Pioneer.
Yep.
I think the only thing is, like, we say it's just Pioneer, but, like, Lotus Field is not a deck.
Correct.
Which, another thing, right, like, I think we've talked about this as well, like, the way they treat Lotus Field on Arena.
Mm-hmm. Like, they're tiptoeing around it.
Yeah, leads me to believe that it might be on the chopping block as well.
Yeah.
And then we get to, like, the change that, like, really kind of matters.
Mm-hmm. And this is Modern.
Mm-hmm.
Violent Outburst was banned. If you don't know what Violent Outburst is, it's basically a 3-mana spell that cascades. You really don't have to worry about the rest of it.
No. Every so often that comes up. Yeah. So, it was the backbone of the... one of, if not the best deck in the format for maybe the last year.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, the third or fourth best deck in the format.
Mm-hmm.
So, it was in Rhinos. And then it's in Living End.
Yep. So basically, you're looking to cast Violent Outburst and then cascade into the free suspend spells.
Yeah. So either Crashing Footfalls or Living End.
Yep.
And then, so some of the problematic play patterns is all of the other versions of this, like, 3-mana cascade are sorceries. This was the only instant. So yep. That had the unintended consequence of letting Force of Negation protect your combo.
Yeah, also giving all your creatures pseudo haste.
Yeah. And then also, Rhinos got better because of Leyland of the Guild Pact.
Yeah.
Right, it became, like, part Rhinos, part Domain.
Mm-hmm.
Where they got to play Scion of Draco. And when it resolved, if Leyland of the Guild Pact was out, your Scion was blue, so it had hexproof.
Mm-hmm.
And so it got all the different abilities for having all the different colors.
Vigilance, Hexproof, Lifelink, First Strike, Trample?
Yes. So, for, like,
low price of 2-mana?
Mm-hmm. So, like, Guild Pack, land, 4/4, unkillable.
Yep.
And then also it had, like, the joy of getting to play Leyline Binding, a card that was probably also a mistake. Cascade and, as we found, Discover are mm-hmm. fine cards when they spin the wheel, but in Constructed, they never spin the wheel.
Yeah, you build the deck to do a thing, not to spin the wheel.
Yeah. Remember like, Shardless Bug in Legacy?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that just seems so cute. Now, sometimes you hit a Deathrite Shaman. It's like, no, stop.
Sometimes you hit an Ancestral Visions.
Yeah, it's like, one of those is way better. Payoff.
You get to draw 3 cards.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
This is like, oh, you win the game. So, like, Violent Outburst has been, like, a card that has, like, been, like, not okay on some level for a very long time. Like, Violent Outburst and Living End was mm-hmm. a thing 10 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I bought Living End. I couldn't even tell you when. Forever. I think it was one of the first Modern decks I bought.
Yeah, and you played it at a Modern GP.
I did. Unsuccessfully.
But, like, Violent Outburst has, like, been around and Living End forever, and yep. They had to play, what is that card? The one red-black target creature can't block?
Demonic Dread?
Demonic Dread.
Yep.
That was the other Cascade card.
Yep.
Right? But when they got Shardless Agent...
You didn't have to play Demonic Dread anymore.
You had to play Demonic Dread, and it, like... shares, like, it shared green, so you got to be teamer, so you got to bring in blue.
Yep.
And then, oh, hey, I get free counter spells. So, like, that's really gonna, like, take a, like, really shake up Modern, because, like, two of the top, like, 4 decks played that card.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, there are replacements. There's, like, Ardent Plea that is blue-white.
Yeah, basically the same thing, but it's blue-white, yeah.
But it's a sorcery.
Yeah, like, before Shardless was in Modern, like, mm-hmm. there were versions of Living End that played Ardent Plea, though.
Yeah, but they always, a lot of them also still had Violent Outburst. It was like Violent Outburst plus. Yep. But Violent Outburst is like the best of the Cascades.
Well, no, the blue white ones played. There was a different one. It was Ardent Plea and something else. I don't think it was Violent Outburst.
But you have so like you could like become like Bant, because there's not like a huge draw to being red other than like Oliphant. But like the Eagles are fine if you want to like swap Oliphant for Eagles. And like Living In could also be kind of stuck at sorcery speed.
Yeah.
Right. Like that's fine. So like they're gonna get a little bit worse, but they'll probably still be around. But the problem, right, is like the line between unplayable and playable and modern is so thin.
Yeah, it's a razor.
Right, like making these decks a little bit worse might make them unplayable. And like,
well, I mean, that's the problem Living End has had for years. It's either abysmal or the best deck in the format, and like literally nowhere in between.
Yeah, like it's never like the eighth best deck. It's either like tier two or like the first or second best deck. Because like the thing it does is so powerful, and like it's kind of like Tron 8 years ago, where like, oh, did you like pack like 4 pieces or 5 pieces of Tron Hate in your sideboard? No. Did all of you not pack that much? Okay, cool. Tron's winning this tournament.
Right.
And then like the next 3 weeks when everyone brought all their Tron Hate, it was not good anymore.
Yeah. Yep. Same deal with Living End.
Like, oh, did you bring a bunch of cheap graveyard interaction? Oh, Living End is awful. Oh, did you not? Sweet, Living End is great.
Yep.
So it'll be interesting to see how it shakes out. In the LSV article, he was saying that like Yawgmoth might become like way more oppressive now, because like rhinos could race Yawgmoth.
Yeah.
Before, you know, it got set up and doing its thing, but without that like faster deck that had like interaction, like Yawgmoth might kind of take over. Which. Probably not.
That's kind of cool, though.
Yeah.
I don't think that that's the worst deck to be best deck, and it's not super typical that like that sort of deck is the best deck in the format either.
Yeah, I mean we've had creature combo decks for a bit.
Yeah.
But that's like the big change. But it's kind of funny, right? Like they took Fury out, which made Rhinos worse, and hurt Living End, but they were also still both too good.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see like if it's still too good, even if it is like relegated to like sorcery speed.
Yep. Time will tell. We'll have to find out.
Yeah. Legacy, no changes. I have kind of like lost track of Legacy.
I have no idea what's played in Legacy anymore.
I have not like watched like dedicated Legacy content in a while.
Other than the Mind Goblin.
Sticker Goblin?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then for all you vintage heads out there, they have Unrestricted Ponder.
For whatever that matters.
Yeah, apparently Ponder has been on the vintage restricted list since 2008.
It's a long time.
Yeah. So yeah, so those were the bans. Modern will be interesting to see kind of what like shakes out. And I was watching a PK video today where he was talking about the spoilers from Modern Horizons 3. And he was like, Emrakul seems insane. I wonder if you're going to get Tron decks that play like Cookbook and are just like on turn 3 playing a 12-12 Flying Trample.
He must have been listening to the podcast.
Yeah. Card is bananas. But it'll be interesting to see, because like we can make these changes and the Modern can look totally different in 2 months.
Yep. We'll never know. Well, I guess we will know, but can't know right now.
Can't know right now. All right. So that's the BNR. Thank you, Content Gods.
That's right.
So then... time to celebrate some of the lower rarity boys.
Yeah. The uncommon uncommons.
Ooh, I like it. The uncommon uncommons.
Yeah.
So, I kind of perhaps set an arbitrary line of War of the Spark forward.
Yeah, so, I kept mine War of the Spark forward as well. Yeah.
So, you know, fire design forward. So, like, modern design sensibilities to now. And, like, I didn't put, like, you know, random good black two-mana removal spell.
I also kept removal spells out of mine.
And the idea was, like, what are the uncommons that have kind of been, like, impactful in various formats?
Yeah, I mean, like, when I had started talking about this, I didn't even necessarily mean impactful, but I think, like, impactful is a good way to judge these. What I, like, had originally meant was more just interesting. Like, it seems like the more interesting designs have been at Uncommon, and the more, like, powerful designs. Well, not even that, because a lot of these cards are pretty powerful. But it seems like the higher rarity cards are, like, just power.
Yes.
And then at Uncommon, you get, like, actual unique good designs.
Mm-hmm. Like, I think that rares have kind of crept into the power level of old mythics.
Mm-hmm.
Uncommons have taken a lot of the power level and interesting design space that used to be reserved for old rares.
Yeah.
And then, like, current mythics are, you know, rate monsters and commander cards a lot of times. Yep.
Basically.
We have to make this card good enough that it is effective in a four-player game. Oh, oops, I guess that makes it unbelievable in a two-player game. And so, the reason I said impactful, it's just, like, I didn't want to talk about kind of, like, every, like, neat card that, like, didn't get, like, play, because, like, we could be here, like, all day. So it was more just, what are the cards that, like, enabled archetypes or, like, you know, did interesting things.
Nope, for sure.
So,
So first up on the list is we have a card that I played a lot of, Mayhem Devil.
We could also expand to the unholy trinity of Mayhem Devil, Cat Oven.
Yeah, I can't bring them all up on the screen at once, but
well, Mayhem Devil, that's fine.
Yep, they're all here. So most of these, actually, I think almost all of the cards that we would have covered in their respective set review episode, and almost all of them, no, all of them, saw a significant play somewhere. So I don't know that we necessarily have to read through them.
No.
But maybe just speak to, like, why it's an interesting or impactful design.
Yeah.
So we got Mayhem Devil, Cat, and Oven.
Yeah, which is
What's the story behind these?
So, like, Mayhem Devil, like, when it was printed, just looked like a reasonable uncommon for the limited environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know that we pegged it for format defining.
No, and then, like, 6 months later, they print Cat Oven. Sorry, listeners, I'm slowly dying and, like, muting myself constantly.
Did you want to pause and grab a drink?
Sure.
A few moments later.
So, we got Mayhem Devil and War of the Spark.
Mm-hmm.
And then 6 months later, they gave us Cat Oven.
Yep.
Which, when you kind of, like, first look at Cat and Oven, you think, oh.
They seem pretty innocuous.
Yeah, and they're, like, they're here to, like, make a limited archetype work or, like, turbocharge it. But they're both uncommon, so you don't think, like, oh, hey, like, this is going to happen very often. But then when you put Mayhem Devil, Cat, and Oven all together,
that's a powerful engine.
You get a powerful engine, like, you're doing 2 damage a turn cycle. You get to throw it around. Like,
you're preventing attacks because you got a free blocker every turn.
That was the worst part about Cat. But like, if it said can't block on it,
yeah,
then it would have been okay. But like, the Oko Pro Tour, the only deck, like my deck was set up to beat Oko, could not beat a resolved cat. Could not do it. I was playing like Scorching Dragonfire? Scorching something that was like the lightning strike that also exiled a creature.
Yeah.
To kill cats. It was rough.
Yep, that happened to be the deck I played for that.
Yeah. Yeah, I like had tuned a deck and had a positive Oko matchup, but then like not a positive red-black matchup, and I played it twice and got knocked out of the tournament.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I think like 5 years later, Mayhem Devil still like Red Black Sack is still a deck that people play. Like at the Pro Tour, people played it. Yep. And it's just like these three cards, and like some of the stuff around the edges have changed. But it's like this core has held together for 4 years, 5 years in Pioneer.
Yeah. Pretty impressive.
Yeah.
All at Uncommon. Supporting two different limited archetypes.
Yes, in two different limited sets.
Environments.
So, then we have another one given to us by our friend Wilds of Eldraine.
Well, or, crazy. Sorry,
this is Throne of Eldraine.
Of Eldraine. Yeah, so Cat Oven was from Throne of Eldraine, and we have the Adventure.
Yes.
This is another kind of package. We have Lucky Clover and Edgewall Innkeeper. Both supported the adventure mechanic for limited, but also proved to be a pretty potent combination when combined with Bonecrusher Giant and Brazen Borrower for constructed.
Yeah, like, and, you know, what's it called? Fae of Wishes.
Yep, Fae of Wishes.
All right, so the Teamer Adventure deck. Again, like, you look at Lucky Clover and you're just like, oh, okay. Not realizing, like, oh, no, this just doubles all of my spells. Like, this is a, like, a 5-mana card in red.
Yeah, basically.
And you got it for 2 mana.
Yep.
And, again, like, it was just there. I don't think it was like, oh, we're going to put a adventure deck into standard, let alone is going to be the best deck in standard. It's like, right. No, this is just going to be cute to, like, make adventures better and limited.
Mm-hmm.
But it just turned out to be...
When they first started expanding Arena, like to have other formats, this was the first deck I put together and anything outside of standard was just Teamer Adventures.
Yeah, like it just has so much value attached to it and stuff.
Yeah.
Both like... So you have Lucky Clover that pays you for the spell side and then Edgewall Innkeeper that pays you when you cast the creature. Right, yep. It was just like perfect. So you had like
much value.
8 of this card that gave you value for like doing the adventure thing.
For something that already gave you value.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, we've broken down the adventure mechanic a bunch of times, and it's just whatever the front side is also draws you a card.
Yeah.
And then when you double that and then tack on draw another card, like every time you cast a spell, you're... It's basically a 4-for-1 or 3-for-1.
Yeah. Like, it's kind of telling that, like, adventures aren't, like, as played as they were with, like, how far power level has come.
Yeah.
And it's, like, kind of innocuous. Like, adventures have just kind of, like, slowly slid to the wayside.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, like, you can build a deck that is, like, infinite 2-for-1s.
Right.
Not good enough anymore. Which is strange.
Yep.
But, like, I think it's close. Like, we had whatever the Teamer, like, 4-4 was in the last set. Oh, yeah.
Yep.
And what a couple other cards, like, it was close.
Yeah. I don't remember. I don't remember the giant. Yeah, I don't remember the giant's name, but, yep. Didn't quite get there, though.
Yeah, but again, now...
Both of these are uncommons.
Yeah, that one. I was going to say, there's really no rhyme or reason to the list. It was just like what came to my head.
All over the place.
So the next
one is kind of the card that kicked this whole thing off. It's the signpost uncommon from MKM and Insidious Roots. Mm-hmm. This card is like a super unique design that is also powerful. And for some reason at uncommon and like reasonably costed.
Yeah, like you could, like, I feel like it didn't need all the lines of text it had.
Yeah.
Right, it could either have made your tokens tap for any color of mana, mm-hmm. and then made a 0/1 plant when a creature left your graveyard, or it could have made the plant and then put a counter on the plant for or on each plant you control. But the fact that they stuck all three abilities together,
right,
is kind of wild. Now, it hasn't like really like taken off, but there have been like
it was a deck for a minute.
Yeah, but there have been multiple standard decks that use Insidious Roots in some way, shape, or form. It showed up in some modern decks for a bit, mm-hmm. like, you know, just kind of like, you know, Aspiring Spike, Doomwake, like that kind of like genre of like modern deck.
Yeah.
And then I've played against like Jund Sacrifice mm-hmm. that was Mayhem Devil, Cat Oven, and Roots.
Ooh, that's gross.
Because like now your deck is super reliant on Cat Oven, but like once you get Cat Oven, like now you either need Insidious Roots to make an army of plants, or Mayhem Devil to just mow down everything.
Machine gun, yeah.
And you like, you know, have this way of like, you know, you get paid off 8 different ways in your deck.
Right.
For getting Cat Oven assembled. So
that's a whole aspect of Mayhem Devil that we didn't even talk about, was the machine gun aspect. A lot of times these cards, just rewinding real quick, a lot of times these cards will just hit a player,
mm-hmm.
whereas Mayhem Devil can hit any target, so you can really mow down somebody's board with it, which makes it even more powerful.
So I feel like this was like one of the first that hit like creature or player.
Yeah.
And then I feel like the different, like the similar versions of the card that have happened later,
mm-hmm.
they've been like only player.
Yeah.
Or only triggers once each turn.
Yeah.
Like they were like, oh, we went too far with this. Not like bannable far,
mm-hmm.
but too far.
Yeah. Pushed it just a little too much.
Just a little too much. Like, I think Insidious Roots is a card that hasn't like been archetype defining, but it definitely has the ability to be that.
Mm-hmm. Well, right. It does something unique.
Mm-hmm. That nothing else does.
Yeah.
And like, think about, we're almost due. I don't know if they can do it like safely, but we're almost due for like Unearth or Persist to come back.
Mm-hmm.
Right, it's been a long time since we've had those mechanics.
Yep. And like, and we are going back to
Lorwyn soon.
Yeah.
I think the end of next year. But like a card like Insidious Roots kind of goes bananas in a world with a bunch of persist creatures.
Yeah.
Like just for example, like persist creature with oh, what was the card that gave stuff Riot?
Oh, shoot.
Like one red green enchantment.
Yeah, it started with a U, I think.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. But like that just goes infinite with like a sack outlet.
Yeah.
And all your creatures get haste, so you just win the game on the spot.
Yep.
So, like, there are ways for this card to, in Pioneer and in Modern with kind of the right stuff around it,
mm-hmm.
to just, like, win you the game, like, right now on the spot.
Yeah. Rhythm of the Wild. Did not start with a U.
Did not start with a U.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, there are ways to make this card just, like, win you the game. Mm-hmm. And, like, there aren't the pieces right now in, like, let's say Pioneer, where, like, I think this is, like, it has modern power level, but, like, maybe setup cost that leaves it, like, in Pioneer.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I don't think it does enough at face value to be modern playable.
Mm-hmm. But like at Pioneer, it's probably good.
Yeah.
And like there's gotta come a point where like there's just a deck where you like make infinite plants.
Yeah.
Like it's like, oh, turn four, make like 40 plants. Do you have a Wrath? Your go.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you do, sack my cat. Make a food. Okay, fine, rebuild next turn. Do it again.
Yeah. Deal with it every turn.
Yep. Speaking of modern power level.
Card that is banned in modern.
Yeah, up the beanstalk. This didn't even...
didn't even register when we were looking at the set.
Didn't register when we were looking at the set. And, like, the blue-green, like, 5 CMC or more archetype was stone unplayable.
Yeah.
In Wilds of Eldraine. Just could not play it.
Literally served no purpose except to break modern.
Yeah. And, like, it ceased playing Legacy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that one of the things that we'll kind of, like, come to as we do this is like a lot of these cards either on their face or sneakily give card advantage.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They're just like these engine cards in and of themselves. And I think that like of these first like five, the most expensive card costs 3 mana. Right? They're cheap engines that are like easy to set up or like rewards you for like playing the game of Magic.
I wonder if that's why I made the comment. Like, I wonder if that's why I think these uncommons are interesting now, is because they're all just engine cards now. And like, that's the way that I tend to like to play Magic, kind of grindy, engine-y. I don't know. Yeah. It's kind of an interesting observation.
Yeah, but like a lot of these are engines. They're all cheap.
Yeah.
And like, I think that's like going through this, like you can look at what are the things that like you should be looking at for like the next set release, right?
Yeah.
Like what is going to be the next up the beanstalk? What is going to be the next like Lucky Clover? It's like things that are cheap, things that like assemble an engine or like give you card advantage.
Yeah.
Relatively easily.
Yep. Whatever lets you plot the most.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I want to plot craps, commit crimes.
Yep.
Speaking of crimes, perhaps the crimiest of crime cards. So, Drown in the Lock is interesting because though it takes work, it like does something that you weren't supposed to be able to do, right? So traditionally, counter spells are bad once your opponent has resolved their bomb.
Mm-hmm.
And creature removal is bad when like your opponent's bomb is not a creature.
Or when it pays you off when it ETBs.
Yes, or yeah. This handles both sides of the equation, right?
It, at a good rate.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that's the most, I don't want to say egregious, but the most compelling thing about this card is that both sides of this spell are on rate. You're not paying a premium for
flexibility.
Like,
it's balanced around you're, like, having to put cards in your opponent's graveyard.
Mm-hmm.
But in older formats, fetch lands, that's one. And, like, if your turn one is Thoughtseize you.
Right.
Now there's one card in their graveyard. Then they play a fetch land.
Mm-hmm.
Now your Drown in the Lock is on for 2 CMC, which is, like, all you really want, like, in modern. Like, you know, of course, like, you'd like to, like, tag a Murktide Regent.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you know, if they have two things in their graveyard, like that's all you really care about.
Yep.
So, and then in Pioneer, we had Rogues, which was like kind of is like a fringy deck.
Mm-hmm.
But like it was able to fill your opponent's graveyard to make Drown in the Lock great.
Yep.
But like Geronimo Luxy's play back to Legacy.
Yeah.
So, but like, again, this is another card that did a unique thing that took a little work, but it was like, I'm a counterspell and I'm a murder.
Yep.
All for 2 mana.
All for 2 mana. Next one up is Blood Tithe Harvester, a deck that we talked about briefly a little bit ago in Rakdos Vampires. Card saw a ton of play in Standard, still sees play in Pioneer, but was also like the signpost for the vampire archetype in Crimson Vow.
Yeah, like, this is another card that we missed a little bit, like the fact that it is threat plus removal spell.
Yeah. Well, I don't think missed is fair because, well, first of all, we did talk about it. It was the signpost. And yeah. Second of all, like, the card is good and sees play in a bunch of places. Sees play in, like, basically every Rakdos mid-range deck and vampire deck, yada, yada, yada. And it's even, like, aggressively costed, so it sees play in aggressive decks also.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I don't see this card as, like, format-defining or, like, a problem or anything. Like,
no.
I think the card is fine.
I think the card is fine, but, like, for as much... Like, when you read the card, mm-hmm. right, like we've said about a lot of these, it comes across as a little innocuous.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, it gives you a blood, but in, like, you're like, oh, like, is this, like, -2/-2 going to matter?
Yeah.
Right, like, it's... The fact that it is a, like, face-up, sorcery speed, disfigure.
Yeah.
Right? That's good when it's good.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then when face-up, sorcery speed, disfigure on suspend or whatever is bad, it's a 3-2 beater.
Mm-hmm.
And then when 3-2 beater doesn't matter... And disfigure doesn't matter. It also lets you, like, filter your draws.
Yeah, unless you found another one, in which case it's closer to a dismember than a disfigure.
Yeah. But, like, just the fact that, like, there are so many, like, different things that it does, mm-hmm. that there's never a point where, like, Blood Tithe Harvester is a dead or, like, a bad card.
Right.
Like, you can't, like, there's not a, like... board where you like are like, man, Blood Tithe Harvester is just bad here.
Yeah.
Right? Like 3 mana for like a chump block and a rummage,
mm-hmm.
it's fine on a lot of boards. And sometimes it's 2 mana for like deal 9 damage and then kill a creature.
Yep.
Which is amazing.
And still a rummage,
yeah. So just the fact that it does so much. And this is something that also is like a fire design thing of like, there's no way 10 years ago an uncommon would have this much text.
No, definitely not.
This is like a rare amount of text.
Yeah.
On an uncommon card.
Well, I mean, if we're talking about that era of Magic card, you're also going to not something that, or you're not going to get a card that makes game objects.
Yes.
Like, game objects themselves are fire design.
Mm-hmm. We have Expressive Iteration. 2 mana draw 3. Or 2 mana draw 2 is really good.
Yeah.
And I know it's not technically draw 2.
Well, I mean, it might as well be. Like, the amount of times I've seen people get one card versus 2 cards are significantly favored in the 2-card portion of that chart.
Yeah, I think the times that people get 1 card is like the, like, I am not sure how I'm supposed to play Expressive Iteration, so I'm going to play it on turn 2.
Right.
Like, that is like, you know, like, you are surprised if your opponent, like, puts a spell into the exile zone on turn 3.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, oh, you didn't hit a land?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's unfortunate for you.
Yeah. And it's also a little bit more than draw 2 because you get selection.
Mm-hmm.
You get to look at those top three and make sure you hit your two.
Yeah, a lot of these were like trying to be balanced around like, oh, you don't get both, you get one of the cards, like you have to, is like an impulse draw.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, no, that's not really a downside.
Right.
It is, but like, not really. And like,
not as much as it used to be.
Yeah. And like, two mana for a ponder.
Yeah.
It's fine. Mm-hmm. When sometimes it's two mana for a divination.
Yeah.
Right? If it's 80% two mana divination and 20% two mana ponder, it works out.
You take
two
those
mana
odds.
Yeah, you take those odds of like, oh man, this two mana divination is amazing.
Yeah.
Right? Banned in Legacy?
Banned somewhere. It definitely caught, yeah, I think it is Legacy.
Yeah.
It definitely caught a ban somewhere.
Mm-hmm. And then my pet card.
Oh, your boy.
My boy, Risen Reef.
Yep.
Like, this could have just been Coiling or Oracle.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you put the land in your hand.
Yep.
And that would have been fine.
Yep.
But it puts the land on the battlefield. It's kind of crazy. And it could have just triggered on other elementals, but it also triggers on itself.
Makes it kind of crazy.
It could have just been this, when it ETBs, do the thing.
Yep.
And left off the other elemental text, and it probably would have still seen play.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that it's like, you get paid when I come in. You get paid when your Omnath comes in. And, yep. Oh, I'm going to hit a land to trigger your Omnath to gain you 4 life.
Yep.
Right? Or, like, I'm going to hit a land on turn 3 so that you can cast your Omnath.
Yep.
On turn 4 and then get a land drop. Like, it just does so much. And, like, it's funny that, like, we haven't had... We've had, like, Omnath printed,
mm-hmm.
Locus of Creation. But there's not been a bunch of, like, playable elementals.
True.
Since. And, like, Risen Reef kind of by itself makes elementals, like, a, like, semi-reasonable archetype.
Yeah, well, I mean, like we said about a lot of these other cards, this is another engine piece.
Mm-hmm.
It's a signpost uncommon that builds an engine.
I mean, that it's kind of, it's, you say it builds an engine, it is just the engine.
It is an engine, yeah.
Right? Like, you build the engine in deck building, mm-hmm. you fill your deck with elementals.
Right.
And then you get the Risen Reef and you're like, oh, I have now assembled my engine because I put I put 30 things that said elemental in my deck, and then I drew one of these. I did it. But... It is, like, it saw modern play for a while in, like, the early Omnath slash, like, pitch elemental decks when people realize, like, oh, I can play Risen Reef and then my Fury isn't card disadvantage.
Right. And also ramps you.
Also ramps you, yeah. Draws you a card. So I want them to print more elementals so, like, my pet archetype can be, like, more reasonable.
Yeah,
I would like it to be like a playable like mid-range deck. I also would like to, could we please ban Hushbringer, whatever the new Hushbringer is, and Stern Proctor. Can we please ban those cards?
Yeah. And Elishnorn.
And Elishnorn. Yes, please. I'm not asking for a lot. And can like Roaming Throne please not be $35? those are the things I want.
Small ask. Another one of the cards that kind of kicked off this discussion, No More Lies,
mm-hmm.
from MKM. This one's not an engine, but it's a super reasonable, like, at-rate card that kind of pulls double duty. Counters a spell on tempo, so much like Mana Leak, which at one point was modern playable, and also... serves as kind of quasi graveyard hate as the thing that you're countering leaves the game.
Yeah, so like, you know, this, I didn't know if we should include this one since it kind of is like bumping up against the line of like, I'm just kind of a removal spell.
Well, so is Drown in the Lock though.
Yeah. But like, 3 mana, like, if you think about like, Censor you can play around.
Mm-hmm.
Quench / make disappear. Maybe you can play around like 2 mana. Yeah. Maybe. You can't play around 3 mana.
No. It's right, just like a counterspell.
Yeah, you can't like be like, I'm not going to cast my 2-drop until I have mana to pay for No More Lies. Like, right. They'll just do anything else and bury you. Mm-hmm. Right, so you just kind of, in the early game, just have to kind of like shrug and like run your spells into it.
Yeah.
And then be like, oh, it resolved? Neat.
Wonderful.
Yeah. But like, it was, you know, we talked about how blue-white wasn't that good in the Pro Tour, but like, mm-hmm. This is a big reason why anyone, I think, even really considered playing blue-white.
Definitely.
Right, like, because blue-white before No More Lies, and then blue-white with No More Lies is like kind of a totally different deck.
Yeah.
Right? Because, you know, it's such a huge upgrade on Censor, and, you know, especially boomers just love the thought of casting a mana leak. Because,
mm-hmm.
Again, for the youngins, that was like the thing to do in Modern.
Yeah, from I like, still have my OG mana leaks.
Yeah, from like 2012 to like 2018 was like just mana leaks in people.
Yep.
Either in blue white or in like Splinter Twin.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh my god, we get mana leak in Pioneer. But like, this shows you like, you can push that card, and it is super annoying when your opponent has it. But like, the deck didn't do well.
Right.
Like how, like, you know, how much does the power level on Magic cards change that you could almost put Mana Leak in Pioneer and it would be like, meh. It's okay.
It's okay. Just okay.
In the same vein, another War of the Spark special.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of these are duplicates from the same sets.
Yeah.
War of the Spark, Throne of Eldraine.
It was like at the beginning of Fire Design, they had no idea how big they were making the fire.
Yeah.
They just knew they were making one. Big. Real big.
Yeah.
Dovin's Veto.
Dovin Ender, says no.
An end of Counterspell War.
Yep.
Like a hard to cast negate with like upside.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like, you know, No More Lies, hard to cast mana leak with upside.
Yep. Yep.
Again, another card that's like legacy playable. Like, if you just want to make sure it doesn't resolve, Dovin does that for you.
That's right. Especially in like the older formats where decks are a lot more spell heavy than creature heavy.
Mm-hmm. And like, they can be tapped out but still have like interaction.
Mm-hmm.
Like the fact that you can just be like, I'm going to cast this now and like kind of put an end to all this foolishness.
Yep.
Is kind of a big game.
Yep. And we have another War of the Spark special in Neo form.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is the best rate for this kind of effect that's been printed.
Yeah, like I think the next best one is 3 mana.
Yeah.
And, like, the fact that it searches for the creature, puts it on the battlefield, and then puts a counter on it has also enabled things.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the Lorehold Vel'Amakas decks?
Yep.
Where you just cast Time Warps and stuff.
Yep.
It is a... not a unique effect, but, like you said, it's the cheapest version of this effect.
Yeah. It's a little bit more narrow in its scope, because it only goes... like, it has to be +1. Mm-hmm. It's not like +1 or less or whatever. It has to be like +1 the set creature. But it seems to have not been an issue.
Yeah, it just so happens that all the Delve creatures are 1 less than a bunch of powerful things.
Imagine that.
Like, oh, this is 6 mana, technically, in air quotes, and A mana Atraxa is 7 mana. Neat.
Hey,
Grizzlebrand is 8 mana, and Alice Worth Rider is 7. Neat.
Cool.
Yeah, so, like, it's, like, the reason that, like, the, you know, the Neoform decks exist in Pioneer and Modern,
mm-hmm.
right? It's a little too fragile for Legacy. But, yeah. again, this, like, innocuous Uncommon, now they're fringe decks, but, like, if they printed a, I don't know, a green-white version of this effect,
mm-hmm.
right? And then there was 8 of them. They might be one of the best decks in the format.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's, like, right on the edge where it's just powerful enough, but the reason there's not, like, a more powerful or more consistent deck built around it is just that there's, it's a one-off effect.
Yeah.
They've not ever done anything like this at this power, at this, like, mana cost.
Not at the same rate, that's for sure. And then we have another banger from Veldraine, All That Glitters.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen other cards with similar effects, but typically they're like just enchantments, whereas All That Glitters is enchantments and artifacts. Mm-hmm. So you kind of get the best of both worlds.
And like, this has been in the like Boggles decks in Modern.
The SRAM Lightpaws decks in Pioneer.
And, like, it got downshifted to Common
mm-hmm.
because they don't care about Popper. and was, like the Affinity decks kind of rebuilt themselves to be, like, All That Glitters decks.
Yeah.
Because the card is bonkers at, yep. like, that power level.
Yep.
So there's just so much that it can, that it does. And, again, like, it is a unique effect. That's another thing too, right? Like, it seems like they print a lot of like these one-off unique effects.
Well, that's kind of what I said at the top of this, was it seems like a lot of these cards would have been like, maybe not at the same rate, or maybe, you know, maybe the knobs are turned differently, but they would have been rares, like unique effects that you would mm-hmm. have seen at rare, like prior to Fire Design. And they just kind of shifted everything around where now you're seeing all this, like these weird, unique cards, like Neoform. Like that's the only uncommon that does that. All of the other cards that do that thing are rare.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It's a weird thing to see how the game has changed.
Yes.
Right. So that was 15 cards.
Mm-hmm.
We did a little bit about the BNR at the top of this. I believe the list we have here is approximately 45 cards. Do we want to call that an episode and pick up?
Yeah, I think that's good. Like, we can call it here, and then we can like work through more of it. And I'm sure something will happen in the Magic world between now and
I'm sure
next week there'll be 6 new sets announced and like
probably
a new format or something. So
spoiling
we'll have
4 sets at the same time and. They're not going to put any set symbols on them, so we've got to guess which cards are from which set.
They're just going to have set
hopefully
numbers.
Hopefully not get disqualified from events for having illegal cards in your deck.
Yeah. Has this happened recently? I'm sure it has.
No, I have no idea. Did that happen?
I don't think.
I thought I was making it up.
it sounds like it could. Like, I didn't know this wasn't. Like, I just bought these packs. These packs were in print. So with all that, I think we got a show.
We got a show.
So again, if you want to reach out to us, perhaps add some uncommons to our list. Yeah. If you're a patron, you can see the list.
You can.
So you know what's coming next. But if you have some cards you want to add to the list, or you know, things that we should talk about, let us know. Facebook, Discord, X, email, whatever you're feeling.
Yeah, hit us up. Let us know what cards you want to hear about. Let us know what you think about this little walk down the uncommon alley. There is like a goal to this as well. I want to talk about some other stuff like pertaining to these powerful uncommons at the end of all this. So
okay.
We have that to look forward to. If you want to support the show, there's a couple ways you can do it. The first is with our TCG player affiliate link. CasualTryHard.com/TCG. Surf on over there, do your shopping, and support the show at the same time. We would greatly appreciate it. If you want to support us more directly, Patreon.com/CasualTryHardMTG is where you can do that. Get access to our show notes, so you get to peruse this entire list. You also get access to our pre-show, and you get the benefit of knowing that you're supporting the show that you love. And we would appreciate that.
The best show.
The best show. Patreon.com/CasualTryHardMTG and chip a couple bucks in.
Yeah. And with that, we'll catch you on the internets.
We'll catch you on the internets.